Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, I see the great one, Doug Tonis, but way in the back, just like the Hot for Teacher video with Waldo, I see our good old friend from Australia, the happy countenance of one, Mark K. from Australia. How you doing, brother? It's so good to see you, my friend. Come on up to the front of the bus.
No, I'm fine. I'm back here. Thank you very much. I like the distance. I'm well. How are you guys?
Just living the dream.
Yeah. I mean, who can't be excited about the current state of this wonderful team that brings us so much joy and love? And I got to tell you, one of the greatest things about this year is your progression to the most despised and disliked man on Bulls X or Bulls Twitter. I've tried to stick up for you in many of these cases and tried to cool down the jets for people that were very angry with you and try to argue for your best interests, but hasn't seemed to work, and for that I'm deeply sorry, Mark.
I don't recall one instance in which you've stood up for me at all, and in fact I can remember several instances where you've piled on, so I don't think that's a true statement.
What say you, Doug? Do you believe that? I think I'm defending our young friend here.
I'm going to have to go with Mark on this one. I don't know that I've ever heard you defend Mark about anything. I mean, maybe sarcastic defense. Does that count?
Mark, this is the first year, I think, where I've really admired your work, where you've really come out swinging against Patrick Williams and taken all the arrows for us, for Doug and I. And it's just very impressive. It's very impressive. I think you've gone overboard a little bit, maybe a few times.
Is that right?
But you've never got to the point where it's personal. What say you?
Well, I don't think so. It's strictly basketball, and it's strictly present tense basketball. But some people don't have the ability to understand that your comments of Patrick Williams in the moment are reflective of what he's currently doing, not necessarily what he'll be doing when he's 27 years of age, which I'm sure is 10 years away, given how young he is. But it is what it is. People are mad. I think the fan base is just angry. For obvious reasons, and some of them for good reasons. And I think you say one thing and it's very easy to tick people off right now, I guess is the point. Everyone's just angry. They're annoyed. They're sick of this team. They're sick of Billy Donovan. They're sick of Patrick Williams, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, ownership, AK, whomever it may be. I don't know if there's anyone in this organization beyond maybe Alex Caruso who's actually liked at this point in time. So if you're not speaking about Caruso and you're speaking about something else, it's going to be contentious. So that's just the state of the fan base at the moment.
Doug, what say you about the state of the fan base? I noticed you two have a tendency to get into some verbal fisticuffs where I like to be more calm and collected. What say you?
I don't know. Everyone is upset about everything with the Bulls, right? There's like not much positive you can say. Even a prophet such as yourself is probably not really thrilled about everything going on with the Bulls right now. And so that just kind of is what it is. And I get it. Like, if you want to be excited about Patrick Williams because there's literally nothing else going good and you're like, well, he's only whatever age he is now, probably 22. And so you try to look at something positive because you're just trying to find anything. And then, someone just slaps some real truth on you. Like I posted, Patrick Williams, someone is like, he had a great game. He had like 9 points and like 10 rebounds or something like that. And I was like, yeah, that was like Wendell Carter's average game. That was his career average over 3 years with the Bulls. Like, the guy you think sucks and we want to get rid of. And like, I'm not saying Wendell Carter is great, but like, his good game was the average game of a guy that we ran out of town because he was so bad. And, whatever, Carter is just a meh player. Like, I don't think anyone misses Carter. Like, oh, wow, we're never going to compete without a role-playing center. But it's just like one of those things. Like, there's not much to be hopeful about. It's going to be a long, difficult road if we don't just get incredibly lucky and have an insane bidding war on Zach LaVine, and there's really no reason to think that would happen. And even if they do, I mean, I don't know what you guys think. Do you think we're even going to try to get future assets back? Or are we going to try to win now just without Zach LaVine? Like, I don't even know if I trust the front office to be like, yeah, we really need to retool. I could see them just trading for like two or three role players and thinking like, well, let's just see what DeMar and Vooch can do without LaVine. Yeah.
I mean, let's finally work the offense through Vooch like we've been talking about for many weeks. That's a great idea. Great idea. Well, you know, let me say, one of the great things about this year is I've mastered the art of artificial intelligence art. And I thought one of my best pieces of work was the other day when I said I've been digging to the center of the earth for 2 weeks and I just found the bar that we set for Patrick Williams. And somehow he's managed to go below it. Did you guys see that one? I thought it was very well done. Nah. The picture was incredible. Doug, I can tell by the look on your face you enjoyed
it. I think you finding AI art is maybe my favorite thing about this bull season. Like no joke. Like it's like it's so much better than all the dumbass gifts you used to post.
Thanks, Doug.
I think it's fantastic. Backhand
slap. I thought the gifts were of a very high quality for the most part, but obviously you disagree. Now I do want to go back on Patrick Williams for a second here because I know Mark's been a lightning rod. Mark, get everybody, let's mark the date and time because I'm going to defend Mark here. So let's get this one out. You know, Patrick Williams is going to make what is it, $9.8 million this year?
Yeah,
he's going to make more money than most of the people listening to this podcast are going to make in their lifetime. Maybe not Doug, but certainly Mark here. Patrick Williams, no matter what Mark says, is going to be fine. Like, he's already provided generational wealth for his family through his ability to play basketball. So why are you getting so upset when Mark has the temerity to question his performance or play? He's an adult. He's a millionaire. He's not like a 10-year-old boy or your son. It's like, he's paid a lot of money to perform, and he's performed incredibly poor. We're not criticizing him as like a person. We're just criticizing his awful play. And if it bothers you, it's not a problem with Mark. It's a problem with you. It's not a personal attack. So, you know, Williams is a good person from what I've seen, and he seems like a great kid. And in the end, you know, that's kind of what matters most, right? Everything else is just window dressing, but this isn't life or death. There's been a lot of great dudes who've played for the Chicago Bulls who've sucked, and he's just another one in a long line of those types of players.
Kind
of
like Denzel Valentine.
I mean, how dare you? Denzel. You know, I was going to spend some time to highlight some of the performances of a 22-year-old Denzel Valentine that looked incredibly like Patrick Williams in terms of final numbers, but I decided not to waste my day on that one. But maybe I'll go back to that and enlighten you all with some interesting stats.
Hey, question for you, Fred.
Mark, any thoughts on what I just said, how I defended you there?
Not really. I mean, I think, look, I would say that 95% of people are probably out on Patrick Williams at this stage, and those that aren't are looking to blame everyone else but Patrick Williams. That's the part that annoys me, that, I think a lot of people have a lot of their identity or their Bulls identity tied into what they thought Patrick Williams could be as a player. And for whatever reason, they're not willing to adjust that, or they're willing to blame other people for Patrick Williams' lack of development. And the connotation continues to be that, you know, what happened with Lowry is going to happen with Patrick Williams. Like, I'm just sick of the excuses. If we could just have a basketball conversation on what Patrick Williams is, who he's been, what he likely projects to be, why he himself has limited who he has been along the way. Have the Bulls done everything to facilitate his growth? No. But I hate this idea that he can't develop in the scenario that he's in, as if it's not possible, as if it's not a good thing to be playing alongside guys like Zach, DeMar, and Vooch and Caruso and learning from real good vets like that, rather than playing next to Cameron Payne and Denzel Valentine, or insert terrible player here, like Lowry and Wendell had to sort of go through themselves under Jim Boylan, as coach sort of thing. So this idea that he couldn't develop in Chicago, or that Chicago has been the one holding him back and he's going to blossom thereafter, like, that's the part that I find nauseating. But at the same time, I would say the majority are now out on Patrick Williams, to the point where it's got so emotive that maybe people are probably taking it too far right now. But like I said before, people are just angry. They're flying off the handle, saying what they want to say. And maybe there's 80% truth in what people are saying, but that final 20%, it's very, very emotive right now.
No, there's no truth in what people are saying when it comes to his failures. Like, it's an absolute insanity that you think Billy Donovan's the guy to blame for this. Like, He's shooting like 30% on the year. Do you think when he raises up into a contested jumper or a wide open one, do you think he's thinking about what Billy did to him? Like, Billy's doing his best to put him in situations to succeed. He started him. He's bringing him off the bench. Like, I agree with you 100%. When I read that, like, Lauri Markkanen, we're going to have another Lauri Markkanen here. Like, Lauri Markkanen averaged 25-12 for an entire month. If Patrick Williams ever put up a 25-12, we'd have a parade. Like, we'd be talking about it for weeks. It's like insanity that the differences in these two players. Like, one guy actually showed promise and legit skills over a long period of time, and the other guy's done nothing on the grand scheme of things outside of, you know, shoot the three pretty well for his career, and now that's out the window. I do feel like it's impossible for him to continue to shoot this bad, so, like, I'm not going to lose sleep on it, but I do agree with you when I see those same things, like, oh, we chased Lauri out of here, we're going to do the same with Patrick. It's like apples and oranges, man. At this point with Patrick Williams, you got to be realistic. Like, this is the worst I've ever seen from any player with such high hopes starting out a season. I can't recall in my history being a Bulls fan anybody performing at this level. Is that insane?
Yeah. Who cares?
Is that crazy talk?
Like, he's never shown anything. He has no skills. Like, I've been saying this forever. Everyone's like, this guy is so good. He's so talented. He has no skills. Like, what skills does he have? He can shoot jumpers.
He's
really
got skills.
What skills? Talk. Like, okay, I agree. If we were in a gym and I was defending him, he could get past me and dunk on me. But, like, that's, like, about it. Like, he is not good as an NBA player. He cannot handle the ball. He gets stripped when he tries to drive if there's a guy remotely near him. He gets, like, too nervous to go up and try and finish through contact or anything. He never makes anything happen off the dribble. He has no ball handling. So he can shoot when there's no one within 10 feet of him. And he can defend in isolation as long as he doesn't have to make any decision. He's the worst court awareness of, like, anyone out there. Like, people say he's a good defender. He's a terrible defender because he just can't track, like, two things at once. Like, he just – so it's like, yeah, there's a guy right in front of him. I think he – and that's why people think he's good, because he can stay in front of a guy sometimes. But, like, he has no court awareness at all. Never boxes anyone out, like – if I had a nickel for some every time, like, a guy just walked straight past him, like, didn't run past him, didn't push him out of the way, but, like, he didn't even make an effort and just, like, walked past Patrick Williams getting offensive rebound. I don't know. Like I said, my new favorite phrase. I'd have a whole sock full of nickels I could beat Fred with. It'd be fantastic. But, like it's just, he's awful. He's just awful. He's just not a good basketball player. And it's like, there's no evidence otherwise. Like, I don't even know why people are still, like, I mean, and like Mark said, I don't think anyone's high on him anymore. I think they're just, like, they've lost it now. He's done. I thought he could be a 3-and-D guy, and maybe he can be a 3-and-D guy later with more development. But I think he's even far away from being good at that.
Doug, it's a good thing my weapon of choice is a sock full of quarters.
Yeah, I'd be dead.
So
he can't take out.
Let's turn it over to Mark. I'd like you to defend Patrick after that attack.
Well, my defense of Patrick Williams is this. We've spent the last 15 minutes talking about Patrick Williams when Zach LaVine is literally trying to blow off this team himself, and we haven't even mentioned that one thing yet. So, that's your fault. That's your fault as host for leading
Point
us down
guard.
This Patrick Williams path. But we should probably be talking about Zach LaVine, no?
That's probably a good topic of a conversation.
Seems to be
especially after, just my personal opinion, last night was a big ado about nothing in terms of him walking off the court, and I saw so many people clutching their pearls about, oh my gosh, the audacity. He just didn't want to talk. So an employee tried to grab him, and he said no, and he just walked out. I don't know. The situation has kind of devolved into, it's clear doesn't want to be here. It's clear the team doesn't want him here. They've been talking about trading him ever since this new group took over, for the most part. He's been in rumors straight through. So I'm very on Zach's side in this whole situation, seeing what Vucevic has done this year and his decline. Why would you want to be here? You got a center who doesn't pull bigs out of the paint. You got a center who just basically clogs up the lane on a direct straight line drive, and a guy who's just totally incompetent when it comes to defending the rim. That's a guy you committed to. That's the guy you want here for three more years while you talk about trading Zach. Like, pound sand, dudes. If you think he's the guy that you should be here building around, it's insanity. So what say you? I'll start out with that, and I'd love you to get your comment, Mark, and then we'll go to Doug.
Well, I just love how, in your defense of Zach, it's an attack on food. I mean, the reality
it's all
is,
tied together.
The reality is, no one is to blame. I don't think there's any one singular... we don't need to necessarily take sides in this instance because each side has valid arguments. Like, I understand why Zach wants out of Chicago for some of the reasons you noted, even though your sole reason for him wanting out or supporting his stance is that Vooch sucks, which supports your long-running stance more generally. So, I get why he wants out of Chicago. But similarly, like, I understand why the Bulls have been floating LaVine in trade talks because Vooch and DeMar aren't necessarily going to garner much back in trade talks. They're old. They're in DeMar's, in the DeMar example, he's expiring. You're not going to get much in return for him. So if you are looking to pivot, the natural selection to pivoting is Zach LaVine. And given his age, he will be 29 later this year or next year in March. If you go that rebuild or retool route, like, he doesn't fit to that timeline either. So I understand why the Bulls are looking to potentially trade him or have his name out there. And to the, at this point, at least, the reporting that we've got back every time that his name has been included in these types of deals is they've only wanted to deal him for, like, that Godfather offer, which is what we would hope that they would be doing. If they wanted to trade Zach, you hope to get a haul back sort of thing. So I think they're all correct, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a wrong party in this instance. The way Zach's going about this now is kind of annoying me to some degree. But like I said, I understand why he's doing what he's doing. I don't know why he's doing it now and not in the off season. Like, that's frustrating. Why did you wait until 10, 12 games into the season to blow this whole thing up? Couldn't we have done this, in July? But look, it is what it is. It was always going to come to this. But why we're coming to it now, that's probably where my frustration lies. I'm trying not to take sides because, like I said, I think both sides of the argument have valid points.
Well, they weren't 4-9 in July, Mark. I mean, that's why.
Yeah, but you knew at best that this was going to be a 500-ish team. Well, maybe you didn't, but given that you predicted 47 wins or whatever it was. But every other sane human out there expected the ceiling of this team to be like a 41 win team, and if it wasn't that, it was probably more likely to be closer to 35 wins than 45 or 50 wins. So that we've arrived to this point is not overly surprising. So that's why I'm like, why couldn't you have the foresight to have done this a little bit earlier on both sides? But it is what it is.
Doug, what say you after Mark's diatribe?
I don't know. I can't disagree with anything Mark said, really. I don't think there's any sides in any of these things. It's like when there's a relationship that breaks up and two people want to point fingers at each other. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just time to move on. Like, Zach's been here a long time. It's not been like some great era of the Bulls. I've liked Zach LaVine, but it's not like we've done anything with Zach. He's not, he's not won us anything. He's not gotten us anywhere. We're not going anywhere as constructed. I've been on team trade everyone for like 2 years now. So, could have happened in the summer, but maybe we wouldn't have done it in the summer anyway, right? Harden was moved, Lillard was moved, Beal was moved. Like, maybe at that point, Zach's like the fourth guy in the market or whatever, and there's just the offers aren't out there. And maybe with some time, there's more desperation. Maybe Zach thought, like, hey, I'll give it one more try and it's just done. Like, I don't know, but like, who cares? It's great. It's great that Zach demanded out because, like, I don't know that we were going to trade him otherwise. Like, if Zach doesn't demand out, and that kind of seems like what the reporting sort of is, like, do you think we were going to trade him? I think we would just roll this year and win our like 36 games, 37 games, and then have even less assets and then decide to maybe just hope Lonzo comes back healthy next year. Because now he's healthy and we can see what it looks like with Lonzo or whatever dumbass excuse we'd have. So at least this forces some movement and it doesn't, like I said, this team's going nowhere as constructed. So anything that forces us to do something different, I would take as a positive. And probably for Zach too. Like, it's not like Zach's been amazing. He's made a lot of boneheaded plays and like whatever other stuff. But man, does he get trashed by a huge amount of the fan base for like a star player. And so, yeah, if he wants to get, go do something else, like, I don't blame him. Like, he's been the scapegoat of his era here, right or wrong. I'm sure he doesn't think it's right. I'm sure he thinks this is terrible. And so, yeah, wants to go somewhere else, good. Good for him. Good for the Bulls to make something happen. Let's move on from this era that we're in now and hope that Karnišovas has learned something from the past 3 years, because I'd put him at like one of the worst general managers in the NBA. You'd have to go back to like Isaiah Thomas, Billy King to find like suitable comparisons for how dumb this guy is. So hopefully that was just like whatever. Like it's your first time being GM. So you know, you want to make a big splash, you did all this stuff that didn't really make sense. Hopefully going back, he's like, yeah, I don't actually need to keep a guy until he's worth nothing. I could trade them earlier when I get signs that maybe it's not going to work. Maybe I don't try and trade my way into a winning team when I'm like set to win 30 games. Like that might be a little bit far away to try and get win now players with all my future assets. Maybe I should actually try to win a negotiation once instead of just caving in to like everything anyone ever asks for. And, you know, like, so who knows? Maybe they'll learn something and be better in a rebuild. Like, fingers crossed. People can grow and change. But, you know, these guys had a terrible start. Hopefully when they actually reset, they'll learn from some of the things that they did wrong.
Doug, you touched on something I did want to talk about a little bit, which is the fan base. I think large swaths of the fan base really hold a great amount of anger at Zach LaVine. I don't understand it. Give you an example. Last night, my son had a basketball game, so I missed the first quarter. And I just got a text, they're down 22-1, and Zach LaVine sucks, from a good friend of mine. I started watching the game later, and I'm like, what has Zach done in this quarter that deserves such anger and wrath? In fact, I think since this whole trade talk has come up, I think he's been a lot more of a team player. He's really trying to facilitate for others and done a pretty good job. I think he's had two really solid games, even though he didn't score a ton yesterday. I thought he played very well. You know, just looking at the first play of the game, it was 0-0, and the Bulls, and Zach's got the ball with about 12 seconds left, and Vooch sets a pick on him. And the Heat switch. So Butler's on Vooch. And what do you do now? Like, this is what we've been talking about for, like, I have to endure on every broadcast. Mouse in the house, let's get the ball down to Vooch. Mark, what are you laughing about? Let me describe to you what happens. Vooch goes out to the three-point line.
Organically, it's come back to Vooch somehow.
He goes out to the three-point line, and I'm just like, I want to scream at the TV in just anger. Hey, dude, you want touches. You want the ball, and you have a 6'7", 230-pounder on you. Why are you running out to the three-point line now with 8 seconds on the shot clock? Zach was looking at him like, dude, aren't you supposed to go in the low post? And instead, Zach passes it to Kobe, who throws up a contested prayer. And it's like, on the stat sheet, what does it look like? Well, Zach missed Kobe. Who was the fault on that play?
Well, Vooch was just doing what you asked. He listened to the big red bus. He heard you say that he needs to get out to the three-point line because when he hits threes, that the Bulls win. And he's like, you know what? This Fred Pfeiffer, he's onto something. I'm going to go out to the three-point line. He did exactly what you wanted, and now you're ripping on him for it. So,
well, let me explain something. I didn't want that, and I sure as hell, two plays later, didn't want it when he's got a solo in the low post. He's got Kevin Love on him, who's washed, especially defensively. And what does he do? He passes out with 6 or 7 seconds on the shot clock to DeMar DeRozan, who's being defended on the three-point line. Like, this guy has played so freaking bad this year, and it's like I'm reading, oh, he's our most consistent player. Puts up a double-double every night. He's put up the least impressive double-doubles this season in the history of basketball. Nothing has been as bad as a Vooch double-double when you factor in his lack of defending the paint. So let's talk about Vooch for a second here yet. Mark, have you come around on Doug's idea that, hey, the Vooch trade was a massive mistake? Are you finally going to admit that, or are you going to hold out and say it was a great idea and it was great for our culture?
I'm going to hold out because Doug's here and I refuse to admit it in front of him.
It's okay. You can say it. They know.
I still hold on to the fact that post the Vooch trade, that they just, I don't understand why they stopped doing anything. Like, it's been 2 years and there's basically been no change to the roster. Like, this is the part that I can't come back to. Like, I was thinking about it the other day. Like, the Houston Rockets, I was legitimately thinking about it. Like, is the Houston Rockets a good news story, early season story, or are they like just legitimately good? And then the more you start thinking about their roster, like It's a new roster. It's a change roster. They've got two-way guys all over the place. They're cycling in a whole bunch of new good players. And then I started bringing it back to the Bulls. I'm like, oh, what have we done exactly for the last 2 years? Signed Javon Carter, Torrey Craig, and Andre Drummond, pretty much. That's the main material stuff. So, like, that's my thing. And yes, the Vooch trade, they overpaid. Was it the right move? In hindsight, no, it wasn't the right move. But I think they contributed to it not being the right move is my point here. So that's the part that I can't get past. Like, why would you, if you're going to make this big play of trying to speed things up, why all of a sudden slow it down? That's the part that I don't understand. And maybe there's reasons, you know, behind the scenes, which we'll never know as to why that was the case. But I don't understand how you can think that you need to remodel things, that you need to change things up so drastically. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, we've got the right ingredients here and that we don't have to do anything else. Despite the data suggesting otherwise, this is the perfect group. That's the part that I never understood.
I go back to actually something I said when the trade was made, and I was not a big fan of the trade, and I just became a less and less fan ever since. But one of my first reactions when the trade was made was like, you have to trade Pat and Kobe now. You just have to. And then it became even more clear, and I said this in right after the trade, but then when the offseason hits, and now you got DeMar and Lonzo, it became even more clear. Like, look, you really are developing a win-now group when you add DeMar to this. And I think what they were thinking, and who knows, if Pat had turned into a star player, like, they put so much of the franchise on his shoulder, and it was such a dumb thing to do for a guy who was, like, coming off the bench in college, couldn't score 10 points a game in college, really wasn't that great. Wasn't even that amazing as a high school prospect.
Couldn't rebound.
Like, he was ranked 39th in his high school class. So it's not like one of these guys who was like, oh, I was like number one or two or three or four, and then I went to college and I had kind of a rough whatever. Like, he was that's like basically future second round or undrafted status if you kept that kind of rank. You know, so it's not like he ever really was like this hot type of prospect. And you basically gambled the whole franchise on him doing really well. And, you know, they probably hoped, like, all right, well, you know, Zach, Lonzo, and Pat can then run, like, a new version of this team when DeMar and Vooch age out. And if they had just traded Pat and Kobe, you know, when they made that move, like, I still don't think, like, anything good would have happened, especially with Lonzo getting hurt and whatever. But, like, I agree with you to the extent, like, I think it was a terrible idea to go all in. But, like, once you did it, it's like, well, what does having Pat and Kobe do for us now? Like, it's nothing. It's, like, absolutely nothing. Like, I would have at least rather had, you know, like, a close playoff series if we were able to get, like, a good player for those guys. You know, like, it does nothing to help us now. We're still starting from zero because those guys are role players. Even if they stay on the team, they're not guys you can build around. They're completely replaceable parts that, you know, help a team that's good. But, you know, they're not important pieces when you're starting over. So, I get that, you know. And for Vooch, I'm past the trade now because, whatever, he ran out his contract, and now we made a new disaster of re-signing this guy for like $60 million for 3 years, bidding against no one. And I'm like, what are you even doing? And I'm like, please, God, do not do that with DeMar this offseason. Like, that's maybe the best silver lining to tie it back to Zach and move away from Vooch. The best silver lining of, like, Zach demanding a trade is, like, I'm hoping they just are like, yeah, we just got to kill this whole thing. And they try to move Vooch for something, they try to move DeMar for something, and they say, look, it's over. It's time to do something else, because I could totally have seen them just being like, all right, DeMar, I don't think they'd have given him a max, but they'd have been like, hey, here's $90 million for 3 years. And I would have just hated that. So I hope we at least dodge that bullet through all of this stuff going on.